You're ready.
Call the workshop to order. First thing is public comment, correct?
Yes.
Anybody in the public want to comment? Oh, I knew we had, we go. Step right down, Mr. Shell.
For the record, my name is Preston Shell with Ocean Atlantic and Shell Brothers. I just wanted to take an opportunity to comment on a component of the housing section of the updated comprehensive land use plan. As some of you may be aware, we've been working on trying to find a location to participate in Sussex County's rental program, their moderately priced rental program, and just wanted to tell you some of the challenges we found. So one of the first ones is it's almost impossible to find land that's already zoned for something that makes sense to do affordable rental apartments. There's really no HR1 zoning land left in the county. The opportunities for finding grandfathered C1 land and developing it residentially have largely been picked over the last 10 to 15 years. And the opportunities for rezonings in already kind of largely developed and inhabited areas are slim. Because if I come up here and make an argument for why something that's near shopping, near public transportation, and has county infrastructure, county sewer, I'll naturally have neighbors. And those neighbors will naturally show up behind me and tell you guys how horrible of a plan this is. They'll usually say something along the lines of, we support affordable housing, we understand it's a need in our community, we just think this is a bad location. And then when you ask anybody really, including I think your office, well, what's a good location? There's silence. And you know, we have actually asked, and we'd love for the county to undertake a exercise where they actually peruse the county and any undeveloped lands and say, look, we're not gonna do this, but you asked specifically for us to guide you specifically, not in general terms, but guide you specifically to land that we think, and I don't care who owns it, I could care less, is appropriate for high density rental apartments with an affordable housing component. We'd love to sit down and have that discussion. So one of the things I think you can do with the comp plan is, and it's similar to what the state has already done with something called areas of opportunity, is to designate areas that you guys think are appropriate for higher density development and with an affordable or kind of workforce housing component. So at least when a guy like me comes in here and makes an argument, I can point out to you all that it's in that area that you have already kind of said you think makes more sense for this type of stuff. And the state's done that, so you might just be able to piggyback off of what they call areas of opportunity. Another thing, though, is that the types of incentives that are provided right now really aren't enough. Expedited permitting hardly saves me any money. There's this perception out there that somehow every month to a developer is countless thousands of dollars. But if a developer is prudent and writes their contracts appropriately, they don't settle on the land until after final site plan approval anyway. So the bulk of that upfront land cost for a developer is the land cost. The deposit, which might be, depending on the size of the land and the cost, might be anywhere from $20,000 to $100,000. And the upfront kind of due diligence fees, which you're not really saving money on because you got to do those anyway. So the time is nice, and I'm not saying take it away, but it's not a tremendous amount of savings, if at all. And I can even show, to the extent people want me to, I can show you in our pro forma what happens when you change a date and move it up 7 or 8 months and actually point to the total savings. And you'll see on a project of maybe 150 rental apartments, it might be 10 grand. It doesn't really swing the needle that much. So I have some ideas on what you guys might want to consider to provide additional incentives that the county is able to do. Some of the kind of low-hanging fruit in that regard is impact fees. Waiving impact fees on just the affordable units. So not the entire project, not the market rate units. But if a project has 12.5% affordable units, saying, look, we don't charge a sewer impact fee for those units, we don't charge an inspection fee, we do not charge building permit fees, and this one might get me in trouble, but I'm going to say it anyway, we don't charge the county portion of the transfer tax for that portion of the land allocated to these affordable units. So you would have to do that on a portion basis. You'd have to say, okay, if it's, you know, 20 units of 150 units, we take that percentage and we waive that portion of the transfer tax on the purchase of the land. I know that that's kind of a sacred thing in this room, but that could help tremendously. The other thing that, and this is kind of my fault or problem that I experienced recently, I was under the impression that the rental program was kind of a mirror image in some respects of your moderately priced for sale housing program. I just recently found out that actually the rental program is dramatically different in that instead of targeting kind of 80 to 100% of AMI, or average median income in Sussex County, it's actually 50%. So what happens is, first of all, it really financially kind of kills the ability to do it. Guys like me with just expedited permitting and a density bonus that you don't really need, I don't think it'll ever happen unless you guys provide additional financial incentives. But what also happens is you're taking, so the market rate, I'm going to use Eastern Sussex County as an example because that's, I'm more familiar with it. The market rate for a two-bedroom, two-bath rental apartment in Eastern Sussex County is about $1,100 to $1,200 a month. We have a project in Lewis. We have other projects we're working on. We have another one that we're starting right out in Long Neck soon. But I was under the impression, and actually miscommunicated this to IG the other day, that the rental units would fall around $800 to $850 a month. So, if, I mean, I'm sorry, the moderately priced or the workforce housing units would be about $300 less a month. That's not accurate. The moderately priced units are equivalent to, in my mind, kind of low-income housing, and they're 50% less. They're about $585 a month. I think if the goal of the county is for workforce or moderately priced housing and leaving kind of the low-income or affordable housing to state and federal programs, I think you're better. And also, if you actually want it to happen, as opposed to just having a bunch of words on paper that no developer that has to justify it to its bank, its investors, its employees, and can't essentially just lose money off of it. So maybe there's a nonprofit out there that has tons of money that can do these kind of things, but guys like me can't do it. Then you have to make some changes. And I think that 50% AMI designation is too drastic. I think if you want it to happen, 80 to 100% of AMI, something similar, kind of looking at your for sale moderately priced housing program and kind of copying that in a sense by using the same AMI targets for the rental program would make sense. I think people can make that work in conjunction with some of these financial incentives that you guys want to offer. So I'm just up here kind of trying to relay that we've been trying to do this, and we're continuing to try to do this, but there's a lot of challenges, and I think if changes are not made, it is very unlikely that a guy like me or any developer that actually needs to not lose money is going to participate in these programs.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your comments, Preston.
Just for the benefit of the council and to follow up with Mr. Schell's comments, some of those things, and they're good points, were taken into account by the commission. Just in the goals, objectives, and strategies, there was strategy 8.2.1.1, which was to improve the county's Sussex County rental unit program and the MPHU programs to provide incentives to properly reflect the housing market and incentivize developers to participate in the provision of affordable housing. So, you know, those are the kind of broad things. I think what Mr. Schell said is that the things we have now maybe don't provide sufficient incentives to go forward. And sort of along the same lines, there was 8.2.1.3, which is explore ways to incentivize private developers to provide more multifamily and affordable housing opportunities. That's sort of the almost the same thing as the one I just read. So there's also a few others that talk about fee waivers for affordable housing. I don't know that there was a strategy that specifically dealt with, you know, exploration of, you know, the impact fee waivers for the affordable housing units. I think that sort of, if I recall, the discussion about that came under those broad strategies that we talked about. So, but that might be something you'll want to look at a little more.
Sure. Thank you. Public comment? Anybody else next? Oh, here we go. Morning, Mr. Walls. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good.
All right, so I'm here today representing the Sussex Housing Group and the Sussex County Homeless Coalition. We have a group that gets together on a monthly basis to talk about housing issues and how we can work collectively to try to address them in our county. Is there a, how do
I can do it.
Okay. So this is us. We were founded in 1998, and we've been working with the Homeless Coalition only recently. It's more of a newly formed organization starting in 2015. And all of our members are also involved in other groups that are interested in comprehensive planning. And so we've been trying to have some conversations with them as well so that the strategies and the recommendations that we make are coherent and make a lot of sense. And you don't have to think about having 12 different groups approaching you about a housing issue that are, you know, all affordable housing, but are all saying different things. So we try to be as cohesive as possible. So we have a couple of ideas that we've presented to planning and zoning. A number of them have made it into the draft comprehensive plan. We're really ecstatic for that. We think it's gone a long way to help us with our with the tools that we have to improve affordable housing in our county. And we have some additional thoughts about ways that we can either address those, change those, make those stronger, be a little bit more succinct in what we're asking for as well. But essentially what we want to do is try to increase the supply of affordable housing, try to preserve our existing affordable housing stock, both rental and homeownership. Emphasize that, you know, housing, economic development, all of these things kind of go together, transportation networks and the like. We don't exist in a vacuum. And then also worried about, you know, the health and safety of existing houses and neighborhoods. So as Mr. Schell mentioned, this is the balanced housing opportunity map that the state uses to try to identify where we need some additional affordable housing that's near transportation networks, that's near employment opportunities and the like. So the areas in the yellow there are those that don't have as many affordable housing units, but have certainly those infrastructure networks that are necessary for people to be sustainable in their housing. The areas in pink are areas that have higher concentrations of affordable housing. And the areas of blue are, you know, kind of somewhere in the middle. So some of the things that we're really interested in are, you know, making it a little bit easier to place housing near jobs and services and the like. As Mr. Schell mentioned, it's really difficult to try to identify, you know, exactly pieces and parcels of land that are really going to be feasible for particularly multifamily rental housing. It's something that we face in the affordable housing space as well as the traditional, you know, for-profit space. We also are interested in obviously placing housing in these areas, in the areas of opportunity, but we also don't want to penalize affordable housing that's outside of these areas. So right now in the draft comprehensive plan, it mentions that letters of support for things like low-income housing tax credit product developments or USDA developments, those sorts of things that are kind of subsidized affordable rental housing, will only be provided if the developments are proposed in these areas. And, you know, we think we really want to try to push people to these areas because it's an area where we really need it. But if someone's developing a senior rental housing program and they've got to do it in Western Sussex County because that's the only place that they can get the land and the demand is really high, we want to make sure we can still provide those letters of support. We want to make sure that the investment that's available to us in Sussex County is coming to us and that we can really, you know, make those things happen. We also, you know, as we're looking at other parts of the comprehensive plan and, you know, consistency of neighborhood and how things are intertwined, we want to be really careful just about the language that's in the plan to make sure that we're not pushing out and providing, you know, really easy arguments for people to say, right, just like Mr. Schell mentioned, you know, we want this. We really think there's this need for affordable housing, but I just don't think this is the place. So we're just really trying to be conscious of that. And then we also like the idea of, you know, redevelopment of vacant structures. And so that's something that's mentioned in the plan already. And, you know, how do we revitalize that? And we think that there's an opportunity to revitalize that for some of our housing and social service needs as well, in addition to using it simply for, you know, economic development, retail, and the like. So we think that there's a nice marriage there. So some of the existing tools, MPHU and the rental program are, you know, they're important tools, but they're underutilized. They have a number of challenges, as we mentioned earlier today. And so, you know, we really need to talk to our developers, both our for-profit and our nonprofit developers, about, you know, what's working and what's not working, and really look at those ordinances and see if we can make them stronger and make them easier for people to adopt and utilize. You know, we need to look at that incentive structure. You know, multifamily housing it's expensive. And even when you have subsidies that are coming from either the state or federal resources, it's still incredibly expensive. I read a report this morning that said that the average Social Security income for someone in Kent County right now is $733. And so that's Kent. It's a little different than Sussex, but it can't be that different. And so, you know, if you're trying to find a home or a place for someone to live that's 30% of their income, which is $219. And so, you know, these subsidies have to be enough that we can make it feasible for someone to live in a safe, you know, affordable place, because your housing impacts your health and all of the other things that, that go with that. And so, you know, even if we have federal subsidies, even if we have state subsidies, it's often not enough. So if there's potential for incentives, whether that be, you know, impact fees or other sort of waivers, you know, every dollar makes a difference in these properties. And then some of the other things that we are looking at, you know, certainly the fee waiver program. So right now, my understanding of the fee waiver is if, for instance, Habitat's building a home for sale, they have an opportunity to defer that impact fee until the property is sold to the buyer. For someone who's making those kind of low $20,000, $20,000 to $30,000 a year, that might make a difference even with a 0% mortgage and a subsidized house about whether they can afford it or not. And so we really are cognizant of the fact that, you know, the county has a system in place and that it's hard to, you know, to move and steer the train. But to the same respect, you know, is there ability to have some sort of sliding structure for people who are at, you know, 30% of AMI? You know, they're making $22,000, they're doing the best they can, and it's really difficult for them. And that couple hundred dollars a year might make a difference about whether they can actually afford that home or not. Another thing to just kind of understand is that when we are building affordable multifamily rental housing, those are all have to be in the forms of LLCs. So they're all actually considered for-profits. And so when I talk about, you know, the idea of whether, you know, those additional layering of subsidies and incentives and the like make a difference, if we make those available strictly to nonprofit developers, then we have people who are doing really amazing things that aren't able to benefit from that, and that in turn passes on as rent to the home buyer because they've got to support to the renter. They have to support the debt that's on that property. They have to support the maintenance and the maintenance reserves and the like. So every dollar counts. So the other thing I think is really important just to note is that we have a lot of resources coming into Sussex County and resources that are available to us. And so one of the things that we're really interested in is how do we make the most of those dollars that are available? How do we not leave something on the table that could be available to us? And so we have a couple of things. I just have an example here with the Federal Home Loan Bank investment, $3.1 million in the last 5 years, supporting 52 units. The low-income housing tax credit is over, I think, $10 million that's been invested in the last 5 years. So these are really significant. It's also important to note that, you know, we're getting roughly, I looked in the last 5 years, there were almost twice as many LIHTC developments that were done in New Castle County as there were done in Sussex County. So it's hard to kind of pull it together because land here is expensive and it's hard to do and we have to compete. And so some of the things that we can do to compete for these resources are those letters of support that I mentioned earlier, are identifying in the plan and in the plan maps where existing low-income housing in respect to multifamily rental already is and saying, we support these developments. And so we're seeing that a lot of USDA developments are now converting to the low-income housing tax credit because the USDA resources aren't available anymore. We're seeing that a number of our low-income housing tax credit rental properties are reaching their compliance period. They have to be redeveloped or they have the potential to lose subsidy. And so by saying upfront in the plan, you know, we support these units. We'd love to see them redevelop. We'd love to see them stay as affordable housing. You know, it's easier to preserve our existing stock than it is to get new stock. The state's qualified action plan, you know, how people apply for those changes. And so, you know, what level of support they're looking for might be different today than it is tomorrow. But just saying up front that, you know, we support these and we support their preservation, it goes a long way. Let's get that in there and plan for it now. The draft plan also mentions a potential development of a community development fund that could be utilized for affordable housing services for people of low and moderate income. We're definitely supportive of that. You know, we think that another way that you could potentially leverage that tool is actually to have it be kind of its own nonprofit. The state of Delaware has the Delaware Diamond Fund. So, you know, the ability for the county to go out and seek outside resources from federal, regional sources and the like that they can utilize to augment their existing tools, but also to support the developers and the nonprofits that are here doing those services today. We also talk in the plan, or the county does, you know, about ways to look at some existing tools that are out there, you know, tiny houses, you know, tiny villages and the like, and how we can utilize those and those smaller footprints to house people more affordably. We're 100% in support of that. We think that the county has a lot of existing tools that could just be augmented a little bit to make it a little easier for people to access, like the garage studio apartment ordinance, you know, and accessory dwelling units and the like. How can we set things up so that there's some by right provisions so that we, you know, outline in advance, you know, okay, if you've got septic capacity or you're on public sewer and you have your neighbors are, you know, in agreement to it and it meets these minimum guidelines as it relates to, does it look like your house or something different? You know, is there a way that we can do some of these administratively versus making everything become some sort of, you know, conditional use or requiring a variance and the like? So also addressing the need for emergency shelter, this is another thing. We need it. It's the demand is really high. We've got tent cities across our county. We know people need shelter. We need to know where you want us to place it. You know, help us understand, you know, what are the appropriate places, what you're looking for, where we can place that. Because we want to work with you, but we also really want to serve people. And if we have to come back for conditional uses and variances and the like, it's really challenging. I put an example up here. This is Halo Ministries in Salisbury. It's right across from Peninsula Regional Medical Center, and it's an old transportation center. And if you look at it today, it looks like a transportation center. It looks just like that, but it's actually a shelter and a homeless resource center. And so it doesn't need significant amount of parking, but it's utilizing a once vacant structure in a commercial area of the town for you know, for a shelter and for homeless services, for workforce training and the like. And so we think that there's some opportunity certainly within the plan, not just in the housing element, but also in kind of that redevelopment, revitalization. You know, how do we take those vacant properties and turn them into something that we can utilize to serve people better, to house people, to get people back on their feet?
But was that a city-owned property?
It wasn't city-owned. It was a private property. And so Halo actually leased it for a while, and then they eventually purchased the property as well. But they were in under the leasing structure. They were still using the same way.
This may be in your presentation, sure. but I'm trying to better understand. You know, we all know there's real needs here mm-hmm. for affordable housing. And,
yes.
We know that. But can you share, because this is what you do. I mean, mm-hmm. you were on the grounds, front line. So is it temporary for most families, or is it something that is there because you made the comment already, is Social Security, i.e. they're older, or perhaps yeah. they're medically mm-hmm. situated, whereas they can't go out and work.
Yeah.
Is it long-term situations, or is it transitional short-term situations that you're finding or is it both?
It's both. And it really depends on the population. And so we know, you know, seniors, when we worry about Social Security, we know what those numbers are from a, you know, what is their monthly income and how do we have to make that work, right? But we also have a lot of young people that are underemployed you know, don't have support networks and the like that are just trying to make things easy. So there's a bit of transitional as well. You've got people who are temporarily unemployed or temporarily, you know, they have a health issue and they've overcome it. And so they only need like 3 to 6 months of support while they get going. They get back on their feet and then they're fine. And then you have people who are, you know, we consider them chronically homeless. They're people who have mental health conditions. They might have substance abuse treatment problems and the like. And so, you know, it can really vary. And some people are in a position where their families can help them. So, you know, something like the garage studio apartment ordinance could help them find, you know, a safe place for a loved one to be near them, that they can kind of keep an eye on them and support them. In other instances, you know, you've got people that, you know, it's going to be really hard to house them long term.
So a follow-up to that, and that is based on, you know, perhaps the demographic or the type of individual that you're referring to, mm-hmm. is how important is the public transportation element, i.e. are they walkable, are they riding bikes, do they need to get on those buses? Talk to me about that specifically, because I mean obviously you mentioned you need direction from us on where you want these places. So I think part of the conversation needs to be how reliable, how important is the public transportation piece in these decisions?
Yeah, it could be huge.
It can be huge.
Yeah, so we have an example of a young man who is working with Catholic Charities, and so he's in Milton in the shelter there, and so he's employed by a restaurant, Rehoboth. And so this young man has to take a bus from, you know, Milton to Rehoboth, and it can take him sometimes hours to get to work. And then he goes to the restaurant, and it's really great because the restaurants at the beach are great about giving people second chances, right? But people get off work, and it might be, you know, midnight, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, and at that point, the transportation network isn't working anymore. And so then they're spending, you know, the last 2 hours of their wages taking an Uber back to the shelter or back to, you know, it can be huge. And so the multifamily affordable housing, they really try to place those near bus stations. But at the same token, you know, the Department of Transportation could certainly work a little bit more with us to try to help people, you know, get on the buses and get access to those and run more regular routes and the like. But a lot of the shelters do have bike programs where they help people get access to bicycles and transportation and the like. So seniors is not as important because of the paratransit network.
Sure. Right. And I know DART has, you know, there's a little bit more accessibility, I think, for our seniors than those that are
exactly
in transition. It appears to be, I think, from personal experience with my own parents. But I mean, I think it's because these are all relevant, and I know the tiny houses. I know I've spoken to Jim Martin many times with respect to that, and he's a big advocate for that. And I'd hope to get him here for a presentation. That didn't quite work out, but I think, I think we have to continue to figure out new ways of doing things because it's getting worse. I don't think it's getting any better.
I think
it appears to be. It appears to be, I think.
And I think that there's an opportunity with tiny houses to not just serve the affordable need, but also to serve the need of, you know, young people who just, they're not sure what they're going to do long term. And so this is kind of a nice transitional opportunity for them to be in a small place that's affordable and works.
Families, talk to me. I mean, is it just individuals? Is it families, young kids? Meaning it's got to be by schools? I mean, so how much is that?
Yeah, so for the homeless system, if your home district is, say, the Seaford School District, and you're homeless and you cannot find a shelter anywhere in Seaford, and say you go to Milton to Catholic Charities for their family shelter service, the school districts actually will pay for the transportation to get the student from the shelter in Milton back to Seaford.
Which is a big expense on them, I know.
Oh, it's a huge expense on them. Yeah, but it helps the children to be a little bit more stable. And so we do see it. I would say for the chronically homeless, not so much the families. I mean, families, they need the help. They need to find the rental housing, and they tend to get stable a lot faster than single individuals that may have, you know, substance abuse or other issues.
Okay, thank you.
So when you use the word Catholic, you're saying state's paying for it, right?
Yes,
Catholic,
for that.
Catholic is state.
Not Catholic Charities. Yeah, but the transportation from the shelter to the school was paid by the state.
I think checks come to, said Catholic. Actually, it was a state check.
So it's
a misnomer in some cases.
Yeah, so Catholic Charities administers a number of state funds for various things like electric bills and other services, yes.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And gas, propane gas, things like that.
Yes, correct, yeah. Yeah, they're a large provider of that.
How much does it cost to have an average lot bought for this house?
To have an average lot bought for...
How much is it going to cost to buy an average lot to put a house in?
Oh, it's just going to vary by location, yeah.
They don't have no figures on that?
No, it just varies. I mean, you know, buying in Seaford versus buying in Lewis.
I'm saying that it costs at least $20,000 to get a septic system in.
Sure. Absolutely, it does.
And that's all, most of those regulations.
Yeah.
So we're talking about what the problem is. Let's go back to the state. It's really the problem. They collected money, and they're collecting more money than it should on some cases, and yet they're giving money away on the other cases.
I don't disagree.
You can continue on, please. We're not going to solve that issue here, I'm sure.
Okay.
Stop here, Mike. Stop here.
Okay, so I think we're good here. We can go to the next one. So single-family housing, one of the things that we struggle with in the county is that we have a lot of units that are substandard. So these are properties that people have owned or lived in for years. And so their roofs may be failing. Their electrical system might be a problem. They could be having, you know, any sort of things with their heating, lead abatement and the like. So you can see kind of the demand from last year on the left as far as housing rehabs, housing repairs, well and septic replacements, lead abatement, heating, cooling, and the like. One of the challenges that we have, one, I would say the county is great in that it does have a lot of programs to help people with repair. So thank you for that. There is the Housing Preservation Grant and Sussex County Emergency Repair Programs that allow for home repairs if the property ownership structure is clear. And so that's one of the things that we asked for that is mentioned as something that in the comprehensive plan that the county would like to consider and look at more in depth. We have a number of people who've lived in their homes for years. It belonged to their grandparent, to their aunt, their uncle. That person passed away maybe a generation ago, maybe longer. And so you have people who've lived in these homes for a very long time, and they're having a really difficult time accessing these services. They're of low income, but because the property didn't go through proper probate. And so, you know, we understand that that's a legal issue for them, but it's also a housing issue that's an immediate issue today. And so that person might have 40 cousins that could have some sort of ownership structure related to the property they're living with. And to get that clear is going to take a very long time and potentially more resources than it's going to take just to help this person stay in the house by repairing the roof. And so that's just something we would love the county to consider is how do we help in that respect. The other thing is we have a lot of private landlords that are doing the best they can to try to keep their homes affordable. And, you know, they might have something that needs to be done to the property, and they're having trouble, you know, really accessing the capital that they need to do that because they're keeping the rents, you know, so affordable. The county does have a program that enables people to approach the county if they feel like there's an issue, potential code violation with their property. We'd really like the ability for, you know, the code enforcement department to work with those landlords to say, okay, what's the issue? And let's have a really honest conversation before we start even doing the penalization to say, okay, what help do you need? And, you know, we can help them provide some resources or, you know, connect them to the right people so that they can get the help they need to help get those back on target. But also we think it would be great for that program to be a little bit more proactive too. I think if we know who the landlords are, if we know where the rental properties are, we can make sure that the tenants are aware that they can contact the county without recourse if there is issues with their properties. Okay, and then my last little bullet there was related to wastewater and water systems and the like. The county's been working, you know, in Ellendale. I know it's been just a real uphill battle trying to get that water system worked out. But we really commend you for the work that you're doing in that respect. We think it's really important to help people stay in their homes. The other thing that the county has been working with is the USDA on the clean water solutions. So how do you help these neighborhoods that have community-based septic systems that are managed by HOAs and get those over to a utility or a nonprofit utility that really knows how to manage and understand those and reserve for them and the like. We think that's really important. We'd love to see the county, you know, just express support for that in the plan because it's moving slow, but we really think it's going to go a long way to helping people preserve their housing stock in the future. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. President, can I ask Janelle or John, is Amy's map referenced? I didn't see the map in the draft. The areas of opportunity.
No, but I believe we referenced the state's area of opportunity website because it's actually a state website, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's mentioned in the narrative, but we don't. It's an interactive map.
Okay.
We allotted a half an hour. Come on forward if you could.
I'll be quick.
Yeah, well, not quick, but yeah, don't waste a lot of time.
I understand. Thank you very much. Dean Holden with Chesapeake Utilities here. I've got a quick show, but I'll ask Janelle to help me skip through it pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Janelle, if we jump to the next slide. So we've got a real quick kind of who, where, what we are, and then we kind of dive into comp plan issues and our current efforts within Sussex County to keep you apprised of those. So Chesapeake got its start as Dover Gas and Light in Dover back in the mid-1800s and has grown into a diversified energy company based on the peninsula, but we also work, Janelle, you can skip through to the next slide. A lot of utility efforts in Florida, in Ohio, and then we have some energy marketing and other efforts. And so those are all the companies that make up Chesapeake Corporation, which is still based here in Delaware. So where we, who we are, where we are, where we serve. This gives you a snapshot. We, from Northeast Maryland all the way down through to Ocean City, we've got infrastructure. We've got about 70,000 customers combined here on the peninsula. The predominance of those are within Delaware. Sandpiper is a utility that's around Ocean City that right now is currently part propane, part natural gas that we're working on converting. We've drilled under and are serving now, starting to convert along the ocean side in Ocean City. Eastern Shore, which is the transmission company, it's a separate business unit that I don't work directly for, but is under Chesapeake's umbrella. Manages and brings the pipe or the gas down from three interconnects, the transmissions up in PA, and brings that all the way down to the peninsula. And so this getting down now into the county shows you, the magenta line shows you where we have local distribution piping, which is what homes, small businesses, up to relatively large commercial, industrial, Purdue, Allen Rim connections might be. The black lines are Eastern Shore transmission lines. Much higher pressure, they typically would serve power plants or serve local distribution companies who Chesapeake Utilities is our local distribution company in your footprint. So then within the blue shows you kind of where we can serve off of existing pipe. This actually shows you where we were when we came in front of Planning Commission in April. We have come west along Route 24 to just shy of Love Creek. The Saddle Ridge development is as far as we've gotten there. And we're working to go east along 24. You see kind of an island of magenta there, which is the Peninsula Lakes development. And we're getting to Legion Road currently. Bochel Brothers is one of our contractors is out on 24 right now doing that. It's about 5 miles. And so we have about 7 miles left along 24 that we're working very hard to close that gap, both for infrastructure reliability and also to be able to serve all of the growth that you guys are seeing there in the north, we call it the North Indian River area, but Eastern Sussex. Next slide. So give you a sense for growth. On average, we're seeing towards 3% growth over the years. It gives you a sense of where our customers are. Some regulatory provisions that we have, the PSC supported us to have an expansion area rate, which allowed us, per the economics that the PSC holds us to be able to get into Lewis and start to come back down 24. I'm cognizant that there was very little gas infrastructure. We were coming out of the city gate south of Milton to bring that infrastructure. It was 16 miles, and so we had to have slightly higher rates than were allowed elsewhere to be able to do that. We are also allowed to have negotiated rates, which allows us either to charge less than our tariff rate of gas if companies are in economic hard times or there are energy constraints on them. It also allows us to charge higher than our tariff rate, which is how we got to Lewis. And so Allen Harim, BB, and SBI Pharma paid higher than tariff rate for a period of time to help support that gas infrastructure. There is also some other information, franchise surcharges, gas recovery. One other thing that I thought of that's not specifically in the show today, the PSC also just recently approved a mechanism that when the economics prove true, we are able to help support multifamily housing and the venting and other internal piping costs. And when you build an apartment building, those internal costs are notable for the developer. And it was a hindrance for us to be able to get natural gas, a very economical fuel for all residential use, but it was a hindrance for us to get into multifamily or affordable housing. And so the Public Service Commission has supported us, and we now have that as a tool to help support growth. We like to highlight some of the neat projects that we've gotten to work on. Seaford High School put in a combined heat and power unit. It produces electricity for them and a thermal source. They're able to heat in the winter and cool in the summer with that. Notable emissions and economic benefits for them. Dell Tech here in Georgetown just a few years ago installed gas heat pumps, which use gas in a reciprocating engine to heat and cool. And it's a really neat technology. It overcomes the cool air feel that you get off of an electric heat pump in the winter, and it allows you to capture the heat off of the engine also in the winter. So it's a very, very efficient process. We like to tout the energy savings that we have helped be a part of. Most of these are the agribusiness in Sussex County, but over $10 million a year in benefits through fuel switching and really notable emissions benefits that have occurred here in recent times. So getting into the comp plan and how we think our efforts align, we are held to expand natural gas pipe only when new users are committed and their revenues will pay for that pipe. And so we're not allowed to increase rates on existing users to expand our system. And so your growth and identification of growth areas helps us identify where to focus. And so we think those efforts really align. Natural gas is always underground, and so it supports cultural, natural resources. And then we look to partner, and the County Engineering Department has been wonderful to work with, but we look to partner on when you're expanding sanitary sewer districts or running new force mains, when we can put more infrastructure in at the same time for less cost. Into economic development, and really a big piece here with the county, we have been in discussions with Mr. Medlars to see how we can get natural gas into the King Farm and into the current industrial park. Here just recently, just this past week, I think we have come to an approach that's going to make it more economical for the county. The challenge for Chesapeake is that the King Farm has one current tenant, very small gas user, and so the PSC doesn't allow us to install that infrastructure because we don't have committed users. But I think through the open season at Eastern Shore has recently had, and our ability to move a city gate, which is a big component of that cost, locally to serve the King Farm may really help reduce the cost that we've discussed previously. We have seen time and time again, most recently through Northeast Maryland, a natural gas pipeline is currently being constructed up there. We're about 90% complete. During the time, once we initiated construction or construction was imminent, Walmart, Lidl, Restoration Hardware, Medline all built new distribution warehouses up there because of the natural gas coming. And these are 1 million square foot warehouses. Now they have Route 95, which is right there, which is a transportation resource that we don't quite have here. But it's another example of natural gas supporting economic development. We ran natural gas into Warwick, Maryland to support PMF Mushroom. SunMed is a medicinal marijuana grow farm that because of that gas line, bought a property and built a facility on it. Oakshire Mushroom is another one that, because of the gas line, bought an option on the property and is looking to build another mushroom company there. What we see time and time again is it's an economic driver. We've been party to, Bill Path has reached out, and we've had a few meetings to talk about how we can support the county's efforts. And this gets into how do we move forward. Bullets here, utility corridors are a challenge for us. DelDOT's a challenge for us. I know DelDOT's a challenge for the county as well. Specifically the Route 24 extension that we're going to Legion Road, DelDOT has said once they pave the road, we can't touch the road for 5 years, which is a challenge for us to serve folks that may come along after that. Paving goes down. So those are challenges that we have. And so identifying utility corridors, working with the county to know when you're putting new infrastructure in the ground or new alignments may be available is a great help for us. Economic development funding, there are sources out there. The VW money can be used for a municipal trash truck conversion to natural gas. And we're hearing, the initial rumors of one of the big fleets to bring CNG into refuse trucks down here in Sussex County. The Delmarva-Exelon merger provided several million dollars that Department of State now holds, which was the DETO that got moved into that group. They have several million dollars for economic development, natural gas expansion. They have not yet told us how they're going to use that, but that money is there and specifically earmarked for that. And so we would look to make use of that if there are municipal or government entities that have that desire. And then the SEU certainly has a lot of different programs that, that provide some opportunity. And so this is the last slide. I just wanted to come back to this to be able to talk about our efforts. And you know, again, the King Farm is one that we certainly look to try to find a solution to help the growth of the industrial park for the county. And it helps us gain new customers and expand our gas network. We also would be very keen for at-right industrial development zones within the county. You know, we're cognizant that a new poultry plant has not been built in the county or on the peninsula for some time. It's a very important economic resource for us. And, you know, I know from my time in the consulting engineering world, the uncertainty over whether a plan gets approved or not chases a lot of potential projects away. And so the consideration, and we've heard some discussion and haven't seen it specifically included in the comp plan right now, but do you consider identifying specific areas, even if it's ag industrial, so those entities know they have an at-right, by-right development potential for different parcels. And so we look to and have had some initial discussions over where we could serve industry of that size. And so that's one area that we also think could be an item for consideration as you work through your comp plan.
Before we move off that, all the green is where you expect to expand in the next 5 years?
Except for within the inland bays, which we don't share the water. But ultimately, yes. You know, our infrastructure is growing rapidly. You've got, you know, robust residential development going on, and we really seek to serve all of those that are interested. You know, really our bigger challenge in eastern Sussex is going to be Ocean View and Bethany. And specifically because you see where the black line is, but we don't have gas infrastructure that runs east, you know, from Millsboro or south. And so every little piece of pipe is a challenge for us because we have to show that there are committed customers to pay for that pipe. You know, at times, and Northeast Maryland was one where there was a private developer that helped fund some of that money on the front end. And so at times we can do a deposit approach, so as growth occurs within that revenue period, that can, money can be paid back if growth is realized. You know, we look for alternative mechanisms that keep us in line with our PSC guidelines, but allow us to extend more so or more quickly than the inchworm approach that does happen most often.
What's the average cost per gallon for you guys versus that of propane?
So,
curious.
Propane varies, and propane varies because
that's $2 to $4, I'd say, right now. It's all over, all over
right,
the map.
And so in a residential home that uses heat and hot water, those residents can save $500 to $1,500 a year or something like that. And so that's, you know, now, and but you have to look at all scenarios. There are some homes where if you have just a natural gas fired fireplace that you turn on very infrequently, maybe it's not the best choice.
Are you the only provider in Sussex County?
We are the only local distribution network gas utility.
Natural
yes,
gas,
yes,
sir.
Is it, I mean, can other companies come in? Is
there, they could.
They could, but you're, they could. As of right now, you're it.
So Eastern Shore is a federally regulated entity, and you could decide you wanted to start a local distribution natural gas network. You'd have to start the utility and go through all of that, but anybody could, yes.
Okay. And then when the county's putting in all these sewer lines, Todd, is there any problem with our engineering department and being able to place this, you know, a gas line in there, even if it's a, like a dry system, but just to get them in the ground at the same time? Is there any problem with?
I'll answer it this way, since I'm not an engineer. We improved our coordination when we can coordinate better so that we don't have to tear the road up twice. That's
right, because he was talking about when roads get resurfaced and stuff, they can't touch them for a while. And
sewer, water, roads, I mean, you guys communicating, and I guess is there areas of improvement that can be there for communication-wise to make sense we're working together?
In the last few years here, and I've joined Chesapeake just 2 years ago, within that time, I think we have had great coordination. Mr. Medlars has been really good. We've got touch points with Mr. Ashman to talk about where district expansions are going on. Janelle has been great to reach out when we've got questions over where projects are in the approval process, and Bill Paffitt's been really good to work with. And so we look to continue the level of coordination that we have had here recently.
Good.
So things have improved since you showed up on the scene.
There you go.
I wouldn't speak to where I was before, but I think right now it is in good state.
Good.
Any more questions?
No.
So there's more BTUs to a gallon of propane than there is to natural gas, correct?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. He's just showing off
anything
his
else,
knowledge.
It is some good tech knowledge there. That is it, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve. We're going to move on our agenda. We got to get back on schedule here. If we get blank spaces or we'll come back with public comment when I make come back during the meeting, but we're only 25 minutes behind. That's close. So.